Senator Rest, welcome to our committee. You have Senate File 802 before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 802 deals with provisions being offered for consideration to by the Board of Accountancy. As you'll note in the Senate research summary, the Uniform Accountancy Laws Acts in Minnesota are put into existing statute, and when there are changes to be made, those changes have to come forward to change the statute. So this is indeed an attempt to provide for those changes that have occurred in the Uniform Acts, and I'll just go through it section by section. Most of the things are technical. Some are more policy oriented, but many of them are technical and just go are in line with the standards that are have been adopted. So the first section modifies the definition of a test, which is what CPA firms do with regard to financial statements or any kind of information. We changed that in the bill too, to affirm that something, any statement that they make or information is indeed true to the best of their knowledge. And it will also then include providing services on lines 118 and 119, an examination, review, and those are terms of art, some of them at least, or agreed upon procedures that are performed in accordance with the standards that we are providing here. Section 2 includes a CPA firm in definition of a peer review and adds that. Section 3 is fairly technical, but it's also a definitional change. Section 4 refines the definition of the word report, which is something, it's not simply like writing a book report, it is an accounting term. Section 5 adds the territory, the U.S. territory of the Northern Mariana Islands to the word state, including in the definition of state. Section 6 is a technical change referring to the board, so it's just saying using the word members rather than one of its number. Section 7 at lines 327 to 330, sub 6 there is permitting the board to adopt rules with regard to the standards of attesting that are in this bill. And section 8 is a technical cross-reference. Section 9, change there is just to remove the word on the financial statements because it's no longer necessary. Section 10 changes the penalty, just the amount of the penalty that the Board of Accountancy can impose on accountants who have acted not in good faith with their clients. That hasn't been changed for many, many years. Its level is set only at $2,000. It allows them to impose a penalty, the same kind of penalty, it's just the amount, up to $5,000. I have checked with the Committee on Judiciary, and they since that's just an amount and it's permissive and the penalty itself is not being changed, they do not need to see the bill. And section 11 as a change that comes actually on page 9, striking financial statements and inserting the word information, which is a more general word that is now preferred. So these are some definitional changes, a granting a permissive authority for a rulemaking with regard to these changes, and allows the board, if they choose, to increase the penalty from $2,000 to $5,000 for wayward accountants. That's it. And there are representatives from the CPA Society and the board here who are I'm happy to answer any questions if members have them. But otherwise, they don't need to testify unless you want them to.
Thank you, Senator Rest. So we have two experts who are available to the members to answer questions in case you need. If not, Senator Rest could answer questions. So we have Senator Peterson, Senator Johnson, and Senator Hall. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rest, could you just speak to the rationale in Section 10 again, raising the fine from $2,000 to $5,000? Are we addressing a known problem within accountancy, or do we have any reason to believe that a $2,000 fine is not as effective as it ought to be?
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Peterson, I don't... the answer to your question is yes, and a $2,000 fine for breaking faith, they can take their license too, but it has not been proven to be something that is particularly taken seriously. And so, and it's been a long time. Let's see. There are some cases that I can tell you about, but I had it written down here. I'm sorry I don't have it at my fingertips of the last time or when the $2,000 amount was put in, but I think it was back in the 90s. About 30 years ago is what I'm told by the CPAs.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Peterson has a
follow-up. Senator Rest.
I do, ma'am.
But you said they can take away an individual's license.
That's the other part of the penalty. So Madam Chair and Senator Peterson.
It would seem to me that taking away someone's license would be significantly worse than even a $5,000 fine. After all, you can't practice without a license, isn't that? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not sure, but mm-hmm. I would imagine you can't.
I'll let the board folks talk about that.
Well, welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself before you start.
Is this on? I'm Sharon Jensen. I'm a member for the Board of Accountancy, and I actually am a member of the enforcement committee that we have that sees the cases. In the past or recent years, we have seen a lot more egregious cases around theft to the tune of, and these are from small organizations, nonprofits. One was from a cemetery board, but they're significant amounts of money that have been stolen to the tune of over $300,000 in some cases. And the board is of the opinion that the civil penalties on those egregious cases should be more than $2,000 that we would assess on a much lesser case that of wrongdoing. So that's why they're asking for an increase in the civil penalties.
Madam Chair, I would inquire
Senator
whether
Rest.
Sometimes these fines are imposed without revoking a license. Is that correct, Madam Chair?
Commissioner?
Yes.
Which is an answer to your question. Not, Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, not always is the license revoked for violating a statute or so forth that she has just explained. Sometimes just a civil penalty is imposed, and then you assume that the person is going to act lawfully following that without revoking their license. They can do it, but it's not necessarily both at the same time.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it would seem to me that, so basically the rationale is that the incremental disincentive between 2,000 and 5,000 but less than licensure elimination and less than criminal penalties, obviously, is the rationale for 5,000 versus 2,000.
Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, that's more what, that's in line with what I'm thinking. They can also impose the costs of the investigation for the violation on the accountant being brought up too. So they can attempt to recover costs that way as well.
Madam Chair, but without that, that doesn't have anything to do with the.
It's in the same
amount.
Section. In that same.
So they can
section.
Do that regardless of whether it's two.
Yes,
or five.
I'm just pointing out that was
okay.
A Madam Chair, Senator Peterson. That's a third thing that they they're able to do.
Thank you, Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, and this might be a question for counsel or either of the two, Senator Rest or Ms. Jensen. The words "in" and "independent" on 121. Why was that taken out of there?
Subdivision 12.
I have to.
The standards.
Section 2.
The standards that govern peer review require independent. So they thought it was.
Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, it is redundant. The study requires independence, so there's it's not necessary to include that word. It's a technical change, actually.
Thank you, Senator Rest. I figured it might be that way, but I forgot it. Thank you.
I think Senator Hall had the same question that Senator Peterson had. Any other questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Ressler, to your testifier, you mentioned in section, I believe, 8, something about a review from outside the state of Minnesota. Can't that be done now?
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair.
Section 8.
I'm looking.
Could you point to the language, Senator Anderson?
Page 4.
That's the only change.
There are no changes.
Madam Chair, the only change in Section 8 is to add Clause 5, which is the subject matter of Section 1.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Senator Rest, in the review here, according to the person that wrote this, says permits out-of-state firm to perform an examination review or agreed upon procedures engagement performed according to industry standard to include reference clause 5. I mean, is the necessary of clause 5, what does that actually enhance the examination from an out-of-state firm?
No, it's just referring to Madam Chair, Senator. It's only addressing the paragraph 5 in Section 1 that was added, which are standards that govern engagements on agreed-upon procedures. So it's
Madam Chair, it's just adding the reference to the first section of the bill.
Yes, it's kind of not clear, like Senator Anderson said, so it's just a reference, Senator Anderson, but Ms. James, if you would like to clarify that.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson and members, the summary references the permission to firms in another state because that paragraph B in Section 8, which is Subdivision 1, Paragraph B, is providing permission to firms outside the state to do certain things. And so as Senator Rest described, it just adds that new activity of examinations, reviews, or agreed-upon procedures that are in Section 1 of the bill to that permission.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Rest, or your testifier, is that not being done? As far as what Clause 5 has indicated here, this new, I mean, it seems to me like we're, you're asking something that should have been done prior to, if you bring an outside firm in. Is that something that's a missing in a case where someone has been brought before your board or to show that they've been delinquent in their procedures? Is that why you're bringing this Clause 5 in? I mean, I don't quite understand why that has to be. I would think that would already be done.
Ms. Jensen.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, these are broadening, these are standards that are recently broadened, that we need to update our statute to incorporate. So what used to govern and agreed upon procedures have been set into their own set of standards because that environment is expanding quite extensively as to the types of engagements that we do. So that's the reason for adding them as a separate body of standards that we have to adhere to, where in our current statute, we don't specifically refer to those sets of standards. So we're just bringing in a new broadened set of standards into the statute. And all CPAs in state and out of state would have to comply with those standards.
Senator Anderson, are you okay with that?
Well, just kind of curious that they wouldn't have been doing this beforehand, and to something else. To me, it's more paperwork. But anyway, that's what they want to do. They can do
They've evolved over the years.
Ms. Jensen. Thank you. Members, do you have any other questions or any other clarification? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Rest. And I'm not going to make an amendment or anything, but I would getting back to the fine issue, I don't feel like there's a strong rationale that I heard back from the organization. The stuff they cited was criminal in nature, which has a significantly greater penalty even outside the fines and anything. And so I'm not sure that anybody, I mean, to sort of rationalize that $3,000 incremental difference is going to have, but below licensure revocation is kind of pretty exacting in nature. I mean, I don't know how you could ever possibly make that determination.
Madam Chair and Senator Peterson, I wonder if we could just have someone else explain further the rationale, and keeping in mind that even an inflationary increase at least that's what I looked at it as, this standard was, this penalty level was adopted 30 years ago.
Madam Chair, no, to that
Senator
point,
Peterson.
To that point, I would say that you would still have to explain to me, I guess, the underlying rationale 30 years ago.
I accept that.
Yep.
Welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself before you.
Hey, my name is Doreen Frost. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Accountancy. And to address a couple of things, small communities don't often have the opportunity to take criminal action. Police departments aren't as accustomed to dealing with the CPA violations of statutes and rules, so a lot of times there's not criminal action until after the board has actually pursued it, especially in greater Minnesota. We have cases where and the other thing is revocations are not permanent. People have the right to come back under a revocation, so the deterrent isn't there as often as we've seen in the past. So, for example, we've had cases where a CPA took $14,000 from the Dorothy Day house. We have a CPA who took money from estates. There are criminal actions that are pending, but it really has no longer become a deterrent when you're taking $100,000+. And the purpose of having civil penalties is to, A, protect the public, and to have a deterrent from future action, and we've found that that's not the case. The other thing is CPAs, after their licenses are revoked, can continue in the tax world. You don't need to be a CPA to be in the tax world. So for somebody who has their license revoked, it again has not been a deterrent.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions, comments, members? If not, Senator Johnson moves that Senate file 8-02 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance. All of those in favor?
Madam Chair.
Senator?
Did you get a request from the Committee on Finance?
Yes, Senator Rest. That committee has requested.
From what division? Do you know?
State Department.
Okay.
So it needs to go to Senator Saxa. So all of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next in the agenda, we have Senate File 753. Senator Rood, thank you so much for coming and welcome to our committee. Senator, there is a huge piece of legislation that is moving forward this year that we hope takes care of these issues in the future, and you don't have to come back every year, and other counties don't have to come back every year to do this work. So we have some, I think, bipartisan support on that effort. Hopefully we will resolve some of these issues, but welcome to our committee. We're happy to
Well, Madam Chair and members,
hear your presentation.
Thank you for having me today. I don't think I've been before this committee before, so and I do hope that we have the legislation that will move forward, that our counties don't have to come before you all the time. Senate File 753 authorizes Crow Wing County to appoint the auditor, treasurer, and recorder positions. I have with me today the Crow Wing County Power Team, and they've driven from Brainerd. And so I'll let them talk about their bill.
We'd like to
welcome
go first.
To the committee.
And would you introduce yourself?
Sure. Madam Chair, Paul Titi, member of the Crow Wing County Board, former member of the Minnesota Legislature, so I understand we don't want to take a lot of your time. We know you've already heard a bill about this. We probably, you understand the issue, I think. We're here simply because we know that bills sometimes get lost as they move through the process. So we missed out last year when you approved five of the legislature approved five of them. We would like to make sure we're in line this time. I have with me Debbie Erickson, who is the elected auditor treasurer to my left, and Mark Liddle, who is the elected county recorder to my right. And then in the background, as always, is a staff person, our fine county administrator, Tim Houle, who is here. If electeds make a mistake, then he can cover our tracks. We're just here to answer questions if you have any, but we don't want to take a lot of your time. This was unanimously put forth by the board. These two elected officials were elected while this conversation has been going on. So we're really here to just answer any questions, but I wanted to be sure that you understood. We know you have already passed out the MACO bill, but we just want to make sure we're on track, that if the bill passes alone and the other one doesn't, then maybe we can still get where we want to go. So with that, Madam Chair and members, we'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We hope that we have enough support that at one point I had so many of these bills that I thought, you know, let's move that other one forward so we don't have to exhaust a lot of our committee time in this. But I understand, obviously, you know, there are no assurances. So I think we're going to have to hear some of these bills and spend some time just in case the legislation doesn't move forward. But we understand the reason you're here, and we appreciate that you came to testify and support the senator on this issue. Members, do you have any questions for the senator or the testifiers?
Okay. I'd be happy to move Senate File 753.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. Senator Peterson moves that Senate File 753 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Rules Committee. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. And I'm going to come to this committee meeting more often. This is really nice. Thank you.
You are welcome to Senator.
Thank you.
Let's see.
I think I might change my vote.
Yeah. Sit down.
Next, we have Senator Carlson. Is he in the room? I know he is busy presenting. I know that transportation meets at the same time. But definitely need to let him know that we are ready for him.
suppose Scalzo could present.
Oh, she's a co-author.
Thank you, Senator Scalzi. I totally appreciate that because I know we have many testifiers. So if Senator Scalzi is okay with opening the presentation, we will take we'll start taking testimony. So Senate File 778 is the Municipal Street Improvement District Establishment. And we have several people who are in the list to testify. Senator, do you feel comfortable with just briefly presenting, and then when Senator Carlson gets here, we will give him the opportunity to expand a little bit, and then we will go with testifiers?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, I would be able to do that. And my name is Bev Scalzi, and I'm Senator Scalzi, and I'm also a co-author of this bill, and I have been an author of this bill in the past in the House. And so I think we should, I'll just fill in until Senator Carlson is available to come across. He's presenting another bill. So we could start hearing the testimony for the members of the committee, if that would work for you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Scalzi. Absolutely. So I have a list of testifiers that is in the agenda. We have Dave Kleiss from the City of St. Cloud, Rhonda Ono, from council member from the City of Northfield. And I apologize for the pronunciation, but it's tough for me to pronounce these last names. Lee Gustafson, Director of Engineering from the City of Minnetonka. So we could start with the three of them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Lee Gustafson, and as you mentioned, I'm the Director of Engineering for the City of Minnetonka. I'm also here representing the City Engineers Association of Minnesota and the Minnesota Public Works Association. City of Minnetonka and both of these organizations strongly support the proposed legislation. A few introductory remarks. First, maintaining roads in our cities is very similar to maintaining your house. Repairs need to be done at the proper time so you prevent repair costs from escalating. Roads are no different, and a great example, is the roof on your house. If you patch and replace it at the right time, you prevent a lot of damage from happening. Proper maintenance to your house and proper maintenance for roads drastically extends the life of both assets. Roads are one of the largest investments cities have. Proper roadway maintenance saves taxpayers significant dollars, also lengthens the life of the street. Studies have shown that for every dollar spent on maintenance, road authorities save $7 in repairs. For example, in the City of Minnetonka, we developed a 50-year life cycle of streets. I wanted to point that out because there's not enough funding to make our roads lasting, to reconstruct them any sooner than that. We have to make our roads last 50 years. We have 210 miles of streets, which means we have to reconstruct 4 miles of street a year. Frankly, we're not up to that point right now. The big unknown is having sufficient dollars to provide proper maintenance within those 50 years. I do have a 50-year plan that I could show you later on, but it's probably pretty boring, and I'll save that for later. For all cities, it basically comes down to local road authorities having the proper funds to make the proper repairs at the right time. The opponents of this legislation want you to believe there's all sorts of funding options for street maintenance. These funding mechanisms aren't realistic, nor are they practical to use for street maintenance. I'll just highlight a few of those points. Special assessments, for example, some people think they can take care of everything they can. In reality, most cities can only assess 35 to 50% of a project cost. That means the remainder is paid by general tax levies. Those general tax levies are paid by the local residents, and in some cases, the City of Minnetonka, a lot of our residents are getting up to that elderly stage. So these people are actually subsidizing cost to reconstruct the roads, some of these very heavy traveling roads that serve some of the areas of Minnetonka. Municipal state aid, or you'll hear maybe later on referred to as state transportation. In that case, cities can only designate 20% of our roads as municipal state aid routes. A vast majority of roads serving groups in opposition are not state aid, meaning this funding mechanism is not an option. Further reality of this funding mechanism is that state aid dollars are many times spent on cost participation requirements on county and state projects. For example, in Minnetonka, we had a $28 million county road project. Our cost was $7.5 million in order to get that project constructed. On the 494 project that was done in Eden Prairie, Minnetonka a few years back, Minnetonka spent $2.5 million just to add sidewalks and bridges. All that money coming out of our state aid account. We recently completed a ramp project on 394 in the Ridgedale Mall area. We spent $6 million of state aid dollars to construct that ramp. The benefits, obviously, you know the Ridgedale area. It was all the businesses, the car dealers, and everybody else in that area to minimize congestion in that area. All those numbers equate, so we spent $16 million of our state aid account, or roughly eight years of allocation, new projects not on state aid routes. My point is, state aid is not a true funding option for state road reconstruction. Also, you're going to hear about development agreements. Development agreements, as if you've ever been a part of one, are executed for a specific purpose. It's adding a turn lane or a signal, serving a development. It's not meant for general road reconstruction or general maintenance, and it's not a true funding source. Special service districts, they're initiated by property petition, not by the city. It takes, I think it's roughly 35% of the property owners in the area to set up a special service district. And the same, it can, as fast as one can be generated, it can be torn down by a different 35%. My 30-plus years of doing engineering work, I've never seen a service district established. I know there's a few out there, but I've been doing this for 30 years, and I've never seen one established. This is not a true funding mechanism. Tax increment financing, a lot of you are aware of that. TIF cannot be used for road reconstruction, road maintenance. This simply just can't be done within the laws. This is not a true funding source. Property tax abatement. Property tax abatement is usually tied to a large redevelopment. And the only increment the city gets off is the very small portion of the city increase in tax dollars. It's very small, and it's generally allocated for a specific improvement, like a signal or a turn lane or something like that that's tied to that redevelopment. It's not spent on continued road reconstruction and maintenance. Once again, this is not a true funding source. But all those things I quickly went through, by my count, cities are still down to general tax levies and possibility of using special assessments. I don't call these numerous funding tools. They're frankly antiquated tools. And we just simply don't have a magical bag of funding tools at the city that we can pull something out of to fund road reconstruction and road maintenance. The proposed legislation before you maximizes the maintenance dollar. It truly does that. No money is wasted preparing or administrating detailed assessment rolls. It's a pay-as-you-go system. You pay a little bit each year to use the roads. And you don't get socked with this huge assessment sometimes when you're least expecting it. It also will clearly save taxpayer money in comparison to special assessments. It's no question whatsoever. The highlights of the street improvement districts are just very simply fees collected within a district have to be put into a special account and can only be used for road improvements within that district. The road improvements are defined within the bill. For example, fees cannot be collected in a commercial district and be used to pay for improvements outside the district. Property owners are thereby assured that their dollars are going to be spent in their area for road reconstruction and road maintenance. Minnetonka, for example, I could see Minnetonka using this in several different ways. One is, if you know Minnetonka and 169, we have the big Opus area. It's clearly defined. It's industrial, it's warehouse, it's high density residential. That area could very easily be a street improvement district for, in this case. All the money that we generated in it would go into there. If you know the area that's undergoing a lot of redevelopment and a lot of things are happening and our roads are getting beaten to a pulp, and it's not fair for, I'd say, the residents and especially our elderly population to be paying to reconstruct and maintain the streets in Opus when clearly it's all, the roads in there clearly benefit just the properties within there. I'll wind up by saying taking care of our streets is important to all of us, and doing it at the right time saves everyone money. Cities need the proper tools to help us properly plan and address the care of our streets. The challenge is, how do we pay for it? I ask that you provide cities another funding tool and help us maintain our streets in a way that benefits all property owners and, more importantly, at the least cost. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Gustafson. Senator, Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We started with one of your co-authors who is a member of our committee, Senator Scalzi, and so we started hearing testimony, but we would like to hear your presentation, obviously, and just for your information, Senator, you have two other testifiers, and so far I have nine people who have expressed some serious concerns, who wish to testify against the bill, and there are others. So I would like to ask for you to present your bill, bring your testifiers, and I would like to do as briefly as we possibly can so that we can move forward with all of the testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm not sure what my friend Senator Scalzi has covered already.
Very briefly.
Okay, very briefly.
Not much.
This, Madam Chair and members, is the street maintenance bill. It is something that has been on the table several times before, and we have had overwhelming requests for this. The last 2 weeks on Fridays, we've gone around the state and have visited several cities, and the cities, the city engineers, the council members are all requesting this bill to be passed. My cities that I represent, the city of Burnsville and the city of Eagan, have been on board with this from the first day that I've spoken to them. We do have some cities, like any city that is a charter city, has the ability to do something like this, not quite as comprehensive as this. The city of Bloomington has used this in the past. Because of some of the elements of their particular ordinance, they're not using it today. I just spoke with the engineer from Bloomington, a woman who has just been named the city engineer of the year, and she told me that they are really in favor of this, and she wants to see it passed. We also have been up to St. Cloud, to Willmar, to Cannon Falls, to other cities, and I would say that it's universal. The cities, especially the ones that are smaller than 5,000, where they don't have access to the funds that are generated from gas tax and license fees, they are very interested in getting this so that they can afford to keep their streets up. This is primarily for, as was said by our testifier here, for maintenance and for increasing the service life of these streets. The engineer in Bloomington said it's very difficult to get funds put together for an overlay or for minor improvements or minor maintenance that is going to make their streets last longer. These are not generally used, and I don't know of any city that intends to use them for major restructuring, reconstruction, widening, anything like that. They are something that is primarily to increase the service life of a street, and it would be a small amount for any front footage that you would be able to consider. Now, I have along with me here Mayor Dave Kleiss from St. Cloud, former Senator Dave Kleiss, and I would like to have you hear what his support of these of this bill.
Mayor, welcome to the committee. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for the record, Dave Kleiss, Mayor of the City of St. Cloud. And on behalf of not only the City of St. Cloud, but this has been for a number of years, we have a group of area of cities, about six area cities, so St. Cloud and the surrounding cities, that every year come up with a legislative list of agenda items, and this is one that we've had on our list for a number of years. So we strongly support the legislation. And to the comments about the tools, we look at this as a tool, another opportunity, and having sat where you sit, one of the things that I think is always important, and that is that ability for us to have that local control, the ability for us as cities to help provide for our communities something that the legislation doesn't mandate that we create these districts. It doesn't mandate that we do anything. In fact, I think having sat in both chairs, your chairs and the one that I'm in now, we get a lot of, as you do, from your constituents. We get a lot of input from people, and I think that aspect of government that's local is the most, and I don't think there's a, especially now because we just are going into pothole season. So the amount of calls that you get and the amount of issues when it comes to street maintenance is at a much more elevated level. But it's the tools, this tool that allows us to create a local funding mechanism. The challenge we have as cities, and I can tell you for the city of St. Cloud's perspective, we have close to 30% of our properties are tax exempt. And of course, I know, and the case has always been that either municipal state aid or local government aid helps offset that cost. The challenge we have with that is that's always a determination of this body as to where those dollars are, and they fluctuate over periods of time. In fact, I can, from the city of St. Cloud's perspective, our local government aid that we receive, our highest level is back in 2001. We're not even close to that anymore. So having the ability to deal with something that is the most fundamental thing that we do, infrastructure, having the ability to do that at the local level where we don't have to. We had a situation where we every year as a city would put dollars into maintenance and the overlays and in the road reconstruction. When the recession hit and when LGA went down, we had to suspend that for a period of time. If we had something locally that allowed us to create this type of fund, we would be able to weather that and continue that. Because once you take a few years off of maintenance, it is exponentially more difficult farther and farther down the road. So the issue for us is to create the tool. The legislature has created some tools in the past that we've taken advantage of. One in particular, I think, that has been a helpful, very similar to this, and that is the streetlight utility. And I can tell you from St. Cloud how we handled the streetlight utility. We, in 2011, adopted the streetlight utility. The legislature gave us authorization. We took that, what we were paying for streetlights, off of the property tax. We lowered the property tax by that amount. And from 2011, actually, all the way up until 2014, we didn't change that level. We kept the same amount. So we reduced the tax. But what we did, and this is one of the other aspects of this I think is important, we created something that's more transparent and is actually right to the use. When we did the streetlight utility, people know this is what they're paying for lights, and they see it on their utility bill. Prior to that, because in fact when we did it, one of the things that I heard right away, what you're going to do is you're going to create this fee, and then you're going to still charge what you were charging in property tax. We didn't. We reduced the property tax, created that, and then had something that was sustainable and maintained over a period of time. We would see the same thing here. That is what we would do. I can speak for the city of St. Cloud. We would create this district, take that off of what's already in the property tax, but instead of 70 to 80% of the folks, 100% of the folks would be paying for it, and it would be equitable and something that's long-term sustainable. So that aspect of creating this creates a greater transparency. In fact, in a perfect world, I would probably create this for everything we do, so that rather than the property tax, it would actually be listed as fees and, you know, look at law enforcement, fire, and everything else, so that people saw exactly what it was paying for. This is just another step in that direction to allow us to have not only the tool, but the transparency and the control at the local level to make a determination whether this makes sense for us. And we haven't had the full discussion. No, we certainly have as a community to ask for the authorization, but we would still have the same discussion we had when we created the streetlight utility or when we created the sewer district, all of those things. So we have that discussion that's closer to the folks. So we're strongly in support of this legislation. We appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for coming. We appreciate it. Senator, do you have any other testifiers? I have another person listed, but I don't know if she's here.
She's here, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Welcome
to
the committee, Council.
Rhonda Pownell, Northfield City Council member, second vice president of the League of Minnesota Cities. So just wanted to tell you a little bit about our community. Northfield is a regional center of 20,000 people. It borders Dakota County while residing primarily within Rice County. We're not part of the official Minneapolis-St. Paul area, which receives related tax and service benefits. But our community does have a high expectation for delivery of services and a quality of life amenities. We're home to two private liberal arts colleges, a robust independent school district, and several large nonprofit entities with tracts of land. This means that 38% of our total properties are tax exempt. In addition, Northfield has several large industrial distribution centers, including Mom Brands and McLean. However, retaining these large entities becomes more and more difficult in a competitive global market. It is assumed that they will have quality transportation networks while being afforded reasonable tax rates and, in some instances, tax incentives to remain viable. Local infrastructure costs are covered through assessments, utility fees, and general dollar levy funds. Due to the unique circumstances of our community, the general fund is already highly taxed to compensate for non-taxable parcels, which account for $143 million in valuation. This is the equivalent of an average community of approximately 8,000 residents. Forcing taxes in lieu of or other confrontational means of revenue collection are just not an option. Further special assessments put unreasonably high demands on individual property owners, many of whom are on fixed incomes. As transportation networks advance and the expectation for multimodal transportation increases, the abutting homeowner is only one of numerous parties and entities that receive benefit in enhanced streets and infrastructure. The Street Improvement District legislation provides for a funding mechanism that's fair. This will recognize users in need across a larger community, reduce hefty assessments to specific property owners, and provide cities with an effective collection tool similar to the counties and the state. Improvement districts will also decrease the reliance on benefit appraisals, which have been challenged recently. I strongly encourage you to consider adopting this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Council Member. We appreciate that you came to testify. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, are you taking questions now or after all of the testifiers?
I don't know if the senator has any other testifiers, but we could take questions if he doesn't, and then we will move with the opposition.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I have no other testifiers.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Senator Carlson. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Councilwoman Pownell. Appreciate the work you do on my behalf and for the city of Northfield. Tell me how do I talk to my presidents of my colleges, Carleton and St. Olaf, who both called me today, and they thought the world was going to end. I think the word holy wars was used. But anyway, we know how important the colleges are to our community, and my understanding of the process is that with community input, with the leaders of colleges and those affected, with the mayor and the council person, the EDA and everyone else, would come together with an agreement on a plan that best suits the community. So tell me how you relieve their fears. And generally, I've been supportive of this bill. I've voted for it before. But just tell me how we deal with that issue in our community.
Right.
Ms. Pownell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're right. Our colleges provide, they are an excellent resource to us as a community on multiple levels. They're an asset to us, as are many of our businesses in our community. And any new legislation or any new ordinances that we would adopt, one of the things that we would do is create potentially a task force to bring together the representatives from around the community, right, that represent the different perspectives on this potential ordinance. Find a collaborative way to find a solution to be able to bring it forward, because it's a benefit to all of us to make sure that our streets are well maintained. Our colleges, as you know, Senator Dahl, have beautiful campuses, and they take care of the roads on their campuses. However, we are responsible for the streets that lead to their campuses, and I'm sure that there are over 5,000 students don't want to, and their families don't want to drive through potholes to get to their campuses. And so I think it's something that we would, as a mayor and the council, would work collaboratively with our college presidents. They've been very gracious in the past. As you know, they give $75,000 each to the city, but it's not nearly enough what it costs to maintain our streets. And I think we're in a new day and age. We are in a changing demographic where we're going to have more people over the age of 65 than we have in K through 12 education. They're going to be on fixed incomes. We've got to find a better way to fund our streets. Thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Dahl, this is such a, I think, an important question because ultimately that will be a local decision. So this is very much a kind of opening the door so that they can do it. And I remember when I went door knocking with my council members, how when the council members very definitely needed to hear. It took us 3 hours because people really want to talk to local issues to council members in a very different way. So it's something that when council members and mayors decide to go in this direction, they are the ones who really have to bring the community together, like you said, and make sure that people understand the consequences of this decision. You really face the community in a very different way, I think, and with respect to this decision. So I think that this is an important clarification that in here we allow the cities to create that. We're not telling the cities how they do it and that they must, but just opening the opportunity for them to do so. Members, do you have any other questions for the testifiers? Okay. Senator Peterson?
I do. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the testifiers, Senator Carlson, explain to me again why you can't raise the revenue with the property tax levy. And I heard a couple of rationalizations, so I could just hear that again.
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, one of the reasons that it's difficult is us. We seem to have a proclivity to put on levy limits very often, and so cities can't plan when those levy limits come on. That's one of the reasons why they want to get out from under that. Other is that, and there's other methods of collecting revenue, which might be just having a property tax increase. But that's not available at the time when you need to do some street maintenance. Plus, the big method is, of course, street assessments, where you rebuild the street. But oftentimes, those are very controversial. The amount is controversial. The cost is controversial. The method of assessment is controversial, and it winds up going to court, and smaller cities can't afford those kinds of court costs. And they usually, larger cities win, smaller cities lose. So that's one of the reasons why they would like to have this ability to have and this is a reserved fund. It's a separate fund from property taxes. It's not a general fund that they could put this money into, and then when they need to do a mill and overlay, when they need to do a topping treatment, they can take from those funds.
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, maybe from the folks from the cities, is there anything right now? I know we've dealt with levy limits before and things of that nature. Is there anything right now that's preventing your cities from raising the property tax, a general levy, to raise the funds that you need to? Whatever you deem necessary for improvements.
Mayor, would you like to?
Madam Chair and Senator, it comes down to two things. It comes down to something that's an equity issue. If, as a regional center, and that's why this decision is best at the local level, and I can tell you that back to the previous question, we would sit down with, we have a large college, a couple of large colleges, in fact. In fact, there are 23. There are more students than most cities in populations. Most cities in the state of Minnesota, 23,000 students. So, if you look at that impact, you also have to take that impact into consideration. Because the other option is you could raise property tax to do that. But if 38% is not property tax eligible, St. Cloud is 30%. You're shifting all of that burden. For a burden that's created by as a regional center by external people coming into a community, and that's offset with local government aid, it's offset by municipal state aid. But if we were if we were assured that those levels would be at the level that we could to offset that and it wouldn't have that property tax burden, and I know and I appreciate very much what the legislature did with local government aid the last time with the formula that the League and the Coalition and a number of groups came together to, but that doesn't even get us close to what is that need. So you'd have that, but you would have extremely high property tax, and you would have you'd have even greater imbalance to where you're at.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, then why not advocate the legislature to allow you to administer the property tax on all of the properties that are in your community?
Madam Chair and Senator, that'd be a different bill, and I think there'd be a larger line here in opposition to that. We're in this bill, it takes us in the direction of trying to create services. And quite frankly, we had this discussion when we created the streetlight utility, but we had a great conversation with our nonprofits and with our university, and we came to something that, you know, again, that was equitable. And they're partners. I mean, you're partners in the community. But, yeah, if you went down that road, I might come back to testify, but again, that might be a greater challenge.
Sure. So Madam Chair, I understand the line would be long, and rightfully so. And I think that sort of kind of gets to the point of the issue, which is that you're essentially sidestepping that issue and taxing them anyways with another vehicle. And part of the reason why you can't do it is because it's unconstitutional to directly tax those properties. And so, which again gets to sort of the heart of the objection of this matter, which is you're administering fees and you're calling it something else and trying to utilize a different legal mechanism to do that which you couldn't do in a more straightforward manner in the cities. And I think that's, you know, that's at the core of the problem that folks have and the folks that have shown up here to testify against it. I'm sure we'll elaborate on that. So,
thank you, Senator. So we have Amber Baucus, Jill Larson, Steve Dombrowski, and Bentley Graves. I'm going to call this for first, and then I'll continue to go in the, with the list. If you could please approach the table and please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I am not Amber Baucus. Amber had to leave to catch a flight. So I am, we're going to move up one person in the agenda. I am Jill Larson from the Minnesota Business Partnership.
Okay, thank you.
Amber did ask me if I would have asked one of the staff to hand out a letter that the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association has drafted for the committee. Yes, and then also, Madam Chair, I want to reference that I hope is in the members' packets. There is a one-page handout on this issue that lists the many, many, many organizations in addition to the Minnesota Business Partnership that are opposed to this bill. And so I will give a few comments, and then other folks will come up and add some comments. Madam Chair, members, this bill's been around for many, many years. We've opposed it for all of that time. And actually, the coalition of opposition has grown over the years. And we have a common belief in our opposition to this bill is that it essentially just creates a new property tax. And it does an end run around the existing property tax system, special assessment system, and the other mechanisms that are much more transparent than this proposal. I also want to point out that from the business property perspective, businesses in Minnesota pay not only the local property tax, like homes and apartments and other properties, but businesses also pay the state business property tax, which is a state-mandated tax. The revenue goes into the general fund. It is a tax that has grown substantially over the years. It constitutes somewhere between 25% and 30% of some businesses' overall property tax bills. And so this proposal would essentially create a third property tax on business properties. And so that is a real concern for us. The other concerns about the bill is that the way the language is written, the districts could be drawn in such a way that business property would bear a disproportionate burden and cost. The way that the rates would be charged, again, would disproportionately be paid for by commercial property.
The fees charged are not really tied to the project specifically, and they continue for up to 20 years. We do believe that local governments have other mechanisms by which to fund road maintenance and construction. As Senator Peterson pointed out, there is the general property tax. Now, we know nobody likes to pay property taxes, but it is a system that works. It's used by other cities. I know the city of Bloomington has been referenced in this discussion. My understanding is the city of Bloomington does not use this mechanism for overall maintenance. They do use something not, you know, sort of similar to this for reconstruction, but they pay for their maintenance out of their general fund. So, Madam Chair, we're just really concerned that the way this is drafted, there's really no way for a business owner to know what their fee would be. There is a public hearing that's scheduled. It's not clear as to, at that hearing, if an individual property owner would be able to know what the rate is, how it would be assessed, what their total bill would be. And in response to Mayor Kleiss's comment about their street light fee, and they actually reduced their property taxes accordingly, there's nothing in this proposal that requires local governments to reduce property taxes by the same amount that they would impose this new tax. And my recollection, Madam Chair, and I know we're not tax committee, but I don't think there are currently levy limits in place on local governments. And so I don't think that that is a constraint that's currently in place. They have been in place in the past. Madam Chair, I'd like to give other folks a chance to testify, but I'd be happy to take questions now or stick around for questions, whatever you prefer.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. We will take the testimony, and then we will call for questions.
Thank you.
Next.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Could you please identify yourself for the tape?
My name is Steve Dombrowski, and I'm the president of Commercial Realty.
Thank you.
And I'm here today as the Government Relations Chair of the International Council Shopping Center. ICSC is a premier global trade association for the shopping center industry. There's over 60,000 members nationwide and roughly 1,000 members here in Minnesota. Our membership includes shopping center owners, developers, managers, marketing specialists, retailers, architects, brokers, and municipalities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in opposition to Senate File 778, the perennial Municipal Street Improvement District Bill. Shopping centers pay significant property taxes and other government-related costs already, and members of the ICSC don't need to see new impact fees that are less predictable to anticipate than levied against our properties. We believe the proposed legislation would be unfair to commercial property owners because under the proposal, cities would be free to draw existing taxing districts in any shape, allowing them to gerrymander and impose the tax only on certain properties. As one example of the many buildings that I am involved with ownership and manage, the total government-related fees are over 42% of the operating costs for this property. This includes real estate taxes, state and city inspection fees, fees on water, electricity, stormwater, and maintenance costs. This legislation would not require the city to show benefit to the affected property to justify imposing the new fee. The districts that are created do not sunset after the project has been completed, and in fact, these fees can be collected up to 20 years. Property owners are already paying for street improvements through property taxes and other taxing mechanisms such as special assessments, local government aid, special service districts, TIF districts, and more. This proposed legislation is simply an additional property tax, and a large coalition of nearly 25 organizations ranging from business trade groups, nonprofits, and faith-based groups request that this legislation reject this proposal. Thank you, and I'm open for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Bentley Graves and John Houselading. If you could please approach the table. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my name is Bentley Graves. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I work on healthcare and transportation issues for the chamber. I won't belabor the points made by the two previous testifiers, but this is a bill that we have significant concerns with and have opposed throughout its history in the legislature. We think it does start to stray from some of the transparency and accountability factors that are built into both the property tax and special assessments, and we have concerns about how this could be levied and the impact that it could have on commercial property. But with that, I will I'll ask you to move on to the next testifier, and happy to answer any questions you may have that come up afterwards.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Hausladen, president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. We are a statewide organization representing roughly 600 motor carriers and their allied vendors across the state. I am also here to testify in opposition to Senate File 778. We do appreciate the intent to try and provide more funding for local roads, but we do believe that the municipal improvement districts would be an unacceptable mechanism, at least to our members. As you've heard from other testifiers, we have yet to see evidence that the assessed property owners will be guaranteed a direct benefit under this system, which we think is always an important principle under taxation, that if you pay a tax, you see some benefit from it. We are concerned that, again, only large commercial industrial property owners, which happen to be trucking companies with large footprints and very few voters, would be singled out under this system. And again, we have businesses that operate in different municipalities, and how the fees will be determined is at the discretion of each city, and so they could be scalable, but obviously probably in one direction, which would be the wrong way for us. They're totally unpredictable, and they are likely widely to vary among jurisdictions. We do think anytime you add a new tax, they'll require new administrative systems to calculate, collect, cross-reference, and then, of course, how do you enforce failure to pay? And then, as has been said, we feel they lack transparency as they can fall outside the current truth and taxation requirements, taking away accountability, control, and, importantly, incentive to keep rates fair. So, in conclusion, we do think that local governments already have significant taxing authority for funding local road improvements, and in those cases, those assessments have a direct benefit to the affected parties, which we believe is good tax policy and should not be changed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Ethan Roberts and Mary Krenke.
Good
Welcome
afternoon. My name is Ethan Roberts, and I am the Director of Government Affairs for the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas. And I am here representing not just my organization and the Jewish community, but an extraordinarily theologically and ideologically and geographically diverse coalition of other faith groups, including the Catholic Conference, the Minnesota Council of Churches, the Missouri Synod of the Lutheran Church, an Evangelical Network. So for those of you who like work my circles of politics and theology, you notice that these are groups that don't always agree on the same things. Additionally, part of our coalition is the Minnesota Independent School Forum and the Minnesota Private College Council. And so I am going to be speaking mainly to the point that Senator Peterson raised earlier, which is the constitutionality of the proposed legislation. Notably, our coalition does not necessarily oppose the Senate file in its entirety. We just feel that the inclusion of Article 10, Section 1 properties, which is all of us and some others, is unconstitutional. But first, a couple points of agreement. Everyone in this room understands and appreciates that Minnesota State Constitution bars the levying of property taxes on houses of worship, colleges, schools, institutions of purely public charity, and we've actually heard testimony, I think, in reference to that, indirectly, City of St. Cloud, City of Northfield, I think to some degree of frustration, noted that 38% of their properties are not taxable. That notably is not a decision that you made as a legislature. That is in the Constitution. So that is not a policy choice per se. That is actually part of our state's Constitution. Likewise, everyone in this room acknowledges, us included, that we are subject to local improvements, I'm not quoting the Constitution, upon property benefited thereby, that's in the Constitution, special assessments. So essentially, if you improve our property in the legal sense of what a benefit means, you can assess us a fee and we'll gladly pay it because that's what the Constitution allows. Again, back to Senator Peterson's comments, it really doesn't matter from the perspective of the Constitution, this is the United States Constitution, whether we call it a fee or a tax. There's actually case law that goes back to before the Civil War, so it's a little archaic, but it says if it is the thing and not the name, which is to be considered. So I realize the legislation speaks of a fee and not a tax, but that's less important than actually what it does. So the question before you today is whether the street improvement fees are more like a property tax, in which case they're unconstitutional, or are they more like a special assessment or other constitutionally allowed vehicles for raising revenue? Now I realize I'm probably boring you, and this might be a bit dry. And Ian Rose didn't sign up for, like, you know, Constitutional Law 101. So I'm thinking about Sesame Street because I'm 40, and I'm thinking about one of these things is not like the other. You know, one of these things isn't the same. We all have that ability to kind of put things in boxes as humans and figure out, is this more like this or is it more like that? And so what do we know about taxes? We know that taxes need to be uniform across similar classes of properties, and they're collected for public purposes. By contrast, with special assessments, we know there's a requirement that the impacted properties subject to the fee are benefited. And we also know the fee is not based on the value of the property, as is with property taxes, but on the value of the benefit conferred to the property owner. And it is precisely because there is a special benefit to the property owner in the form of an increased property value that taxes and properties are required to pay special assessments, a point recognized as recently as 2011 by the Court of Minnesota's appellate courts. And now finally, in terms of the law, before we do the application, I realize that sometimes it can be blurry between what's a tax and what's a fee. The Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court and U.S. Shoe Corporation held that when something, when it is a fee, if it's unrelated to a specific benefit, then more like, then courts should look to it as just a tax. So if you can't prove a benefit, and a lot of people have said this earlier, and not in a general sense, like it's good to live in a community where the streets are nice, but in the increasing the value of the property sense, the way that the courts understand benefit, then it is simply a tax. And here, when applying this framework to the bill, a couple of details stand out. The first, many of the services covered are basic functions of government: street lighting, traffic signals, maintenance. We've heard earlier that if this were to go into effect, that taxes could go down, which I think is a pretty good admission. That this is just a end around around taxes. Another thing we see in Subdivision 3 of the bill, a section literally titled Uniformity, it concerns itself with the property's market value, tax capacity. These are the considerations which are typically considered property taxes and not special assessments. And I own a home in Plymouth. A couple years ago, they improved the street in front of me. I got a special assessment. Part of me thought, oh, it's not fair. Why am I paying the same as the really nicer homes? And I work for the nonprofit sector, so I have a less nice house. Doesn't matter. It's not a property tax. It's a special assessment. You all pay the same. So when you look at the bill, it's clearly it's a property tax. And finally, and most importantly, as alluded to earlier, there's no requirement anywhere in this bill that a benefit be conferred to the property owner in exchange for the fee levy. So I would say that in conclusion, this is a record. This is legislative history. So if this bill becomes law, a court later will look at what was said. And I think already what's been said by the proponents of the bill that we have a problem. The problem is that we have too much tax-exempt property. We need essentially a way around that. So we have this vehicle is a damning admission that's what they're doing, is that they are moving around the Constitution. Additionally, it was said earlier that we could lower property taxes again. So we would ask that this committee follow the state's constitution and remove all Article 10, Section 1 properties from this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. You're making me think about something that I've been meaning to ask, and I don't know who will be able to provide to me. I think there has been an incredible amount of growth of small churches in my district, almost in every other block, with denominations that I really don't even know how they came to be. And I'm interested to see a map of different churches and denominations and things that have grown all over the years. It's kind of I just notice as I walk my district, it seems like my district has a disproportionate representation of very different, but it's just a comment. I would like
Madam
to get
Chair.
That information. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, perhaps it's better than the amount of bars I have in my district.
Yes. I have those too, Senator. I have an exciting district.
Every other.
Ms. Krinke, welcome to the committee. And then I have Amy McDonald, if you could please approach. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. And this is a different committee for me. I see some familiar faces, but it's nice to be here today. Thank you for this opportunity. Here in Minnesota, I think it's important to note that we feel we've been very lucky and very blessed to have had a history and tradition of nonprofit healthcare delivery. Our Minnesota hospitals here in our state are nonprofit. And what that means is that we don't have stakeholders, we don't have shareholders, we don't pay dividends, and we don't pass along ownership of any of the hospitals to our children or grandchildren. Each year, hospitals in Minnesota are required to report our community benefit activities. That information is sent to the Minnesota Department of Health, and it is audited. So for the 2013 year, which is the year that is most available from the Department of Health, Minnesota's nonprofit hospitals contributed $4.2 billion in community benefits. This included $573 million in uncompensated care, $459 million in free community health programs, $431 million in education training, $237 million in research, and perhaps most importantly, $2 billion in underfunding from our state Medicaid and Medicare programs, taking care of the poor, vulnerable, and elderly. These contributions add to our quality of life here that we have in Minnesota. And while many hospitals believe that they might be exempted from the definition of institutions of public charity that is found in the bill, there is a great deal of uncertainty as to whether or not that definition and how it would be applied. Undoubtedly, a city would pursue taxing a hospital, and undoubtedly, this would lead to litigation, which would cost both the hospital and the city where the hospital was located an enormous amount of resources. These costs then would be borne by both the hospital as well as the city taxpayers if it did go to litigation. We hope that this legislation is defeated and that we don't find ourselves in that situation of challenging this. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Krinke. Ms. McDonough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Amy McDonough, and I'm the Government Relations Director for the Private College Council. We've already heard a lot of opposition to the bill today, and I know from Senator Dahl, too, you know that this is a big concern to our colleges, so I'll be brief. As you know, Senate File 778 exempts institutions of purely public charity, but it does not exempt hospitals, colleges, universities, all seminaries of learning, church property, or houses of worship. Article 10, Section 1 of the Constitution states that public burying grounds, public schoolhouses, public hospitals, academies, colleges, universities, all seminaries of learning, all churches, church property, houses of worship, institutions of purely public charity, and public property used exclusively for any public purpose shall be exempt from taxation, except as provided in this section. The section continues to state the legislature may authorize municipal corporations to levy and collect assessments for local improvements upon property benefited thereby without regard to cash valuation. This is the origin of what we call the benefits test for tax-exempt properties, which must be satisfied for a municipality to assess fees on tax-exempt properties. According to the test, the assessment must be linked to a benefit to the tax-exempt property in order for the fee to be lawfully assessed. The proposal in Senate File 778 would permit municipalities to assess fees on our colleges and universities without fulfilling the Constitution's benefits test requirement, because the projects and the costs associated with them are based on the benefit to the district and not to the tax-exempt property. So what does this mean for our nonprofit colleges? A city could, under this bill, draw a district that includes a nonprofit university and only residential properties. It could then identify street improvements within that district that includes everything from street replacements, retaining walls, street lights, and sidewalks that under a normal review would not pass the benefits test. And it could assess all or a very large share of those improvement costs on the college if the college's property owned was classified as commercial and industrial, and it is the only commercial and industrial property located within that improvement district. Currently, our colleges do contribute significant resources to local municipalities, and that is when fees are assessed that comply with the required direct benefits test. Cities already have the authority to assess our colleges as long as the project meets this benefits test. In fiscal year 2012, for example, our 17 institutions paid $8.2 million in municipal fees and assessments, and that was a 43% increase since fiscal year 2005. Additional costs added to our institutions will require them to either pass the cost on to students through tuition increases or cut expenses that will have a negative impact on the academic and student support offerings our colleges provide. And this is the public service for which our colleges are granted their tax-exempt status. So thank you for your attention, and we would urge you to oppose the bill as drafted.
Thank you, and thank you for your testimony. Members, this is a kind of an interesting proposal, Senator Carlson, because in essence, you know, a lot of the conversation here is around the tax provision, as you heard, and we invested about an hour of our time into that. I wanted members to hear this because this is kind of the core essential piece of your proposal. But the reason it is here is because we're through this process, we simply allow the cities to do that if they wish to. But really the significance here is the tax provision. So it was kind of an interesting conversation for this committee to begin with. So I want to make sure, members, that kind of the issue stays here. It's hard for me to say, you know, kind of really what the issue is. And really the question then is whether or not we allow the municipalities to do so. And so to do so is to tax, right? So it's the decision itself. But this will be obviously highly vetted and discussed in taxes. And the core essential question that you're asking, Senator, and proposal that you're bringing before the Senate is really about the tax provision. So I want to make sure that members you know, understand that. I think there is an amendment being proposed, Senator, that I don't know if you, it's an oral amendment, but I understand that you have been given an opportunity to digest while the presentations were going on. So I'm going to take Senator Peterson, and then we're going to move into the amendment. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Carlson, I may have missed this. What happens if someone doesn't pay the fee for the tax?
Madam Chair.
Senator Carlson.
And Senator Peterson, I'm looking for the particular language, but it does allow the city non-payment to be forwarded to the county, and I'm looking for that particular section.
Senator, that's 314 to 316. So it's subdivision 6?
Yes. Fees.
Fees.
Yeah. Fees that, as of October 15th each year, have remained unpaid for at least 30 days may be certified to the county auditor for collection as a special assessment payable in the following calendar year against the affected property.
And Senator Peterson, again, you know, these are questions for taxes. I know that obviously you all need to understand because eventually we will vote on this, but we will have ample opportunity to discuss this.
I think in this case, Madam Chair, it's hard to separate the local authority from that which you're doing with the authority. So then what happens if it's assessed, if the property is assessed, payable in the following calendar year, what happens if they don't pay that assessment?
Senator Carlson.
Senator Peterson, I would assume that it's the same as any other assessment that's not paid.
So eventually, Madam Chair, would it be correct to assume that as an end result of non-payment that these properties would be foreclosed upon at some point?
Madam Chair.
And Senator, you know, again, that's kind of because it's not the staff will be in taxes will be able to respond to these issues very quickly, but we will try to. I think we have a testifier that may have a brief answer to that question.
Yeah.
Okay. Madam Chair and Senator, just very quickly, it's with any type of tax.
Could you identify yourself for the tape?
Lee Gustafson, City of Minnetonka. It's with any type of tax, it'll eventually go through tax forfeiture. It just builds and builds and builds.
So,
Senator Peterson.
So, Madam Chair, well, first of all, then we're sort of reiterating the precedent that this is, in fact, a tax. But we're also introducing the prospect of foreclosing and seizing churches and all sorts of other institutions that I don't think the public would be very supportive of foreclosing upon.
So, Senator, maybe this is a good chance because the amendment will take care of that, if I understand that, Senator Paul. So maybe, Senator Carlson, are you open to entertain an amendment?
Yes, I do, but I have one. I have a couple of things that I'd like to say first.
Senator Carlson.
The fees that Senator Peterson is referring to, that's the same as any other water fees, any other fees that are levied on a particular property. If they're unpaid, they go to the county and they become assessments and they become payable and become a burden on the property. So if you don't pay any other fees, they wind up in the same bucket.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
But it is a possibility, obviously, that someone could be foreclosed on for non-payment.
Correct.
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, just like it would be if it was an unpaid road assessment. Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Carlson.
I would like to call up one other testifier, if I might, and this can help with some of the question on constitutionality.
Okay.
If I might be able to do that.
Senator Carlson. Yes, our committee ends at 3:30 and it's 3:35, and unfortunately because of the room availability, I'll be happy to. But because of that, I think some senators, as you have seen, kind of they're moving around trying to help you with that question and try to answer and put together some response to do an exemption in here. If you're okay with that, maybe we can move that.
Madam Chair,
but
yes.
It's up to you because this is your bill, of course.
Madam Chair, yes, I would like to, let me find that amendment. I have an amendment on Section 10 that I would like to move, like someone to move for me if possible.
So, Senator Hall, would you like to offer the amendment?
I don't think my amendment is his amendment.
Oh, okay, so it's a different amendment. Okay.
I don't know.
Senator Carlson, do you have a specific amendment that you have prepared?
Yes,
an
I do.
An author's amendment. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I have a question that I'd like to ask, and I don't know the answer to this question.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
her
microphone's not on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Could this, I said I'm asking a question that I don't know the answer to, but I'm wondering if this bill could be recalled by the author and ask the bill to be referred to tax committee. Will be going to tax committee right now. I'm just saying, is it really necessary for us to have this bill heard here?
Yeah.
If you say it is okay that it wouldn't be heard here.
And Senator Johnson, this is a kind of a very interesting thing because it was sent to my committee and we argue that, and Senator Peterson is absolutely correct. One doesn't go without the other. Of course, we it's our jurisdiction to look into local authority and how that decision is being made. But this is the decision. So how do you kind of separate the two? Senator Carlson, I think that this committee has heard the issue. I think that we have heard the testimony. I believe that is kind of a good decision, in my humble opinion, but this is your bill. I feel quite uncomfortable with moving the bill on provisions that we don't even have staff to reply to questions that members have. So I'm going to entertain a couple some input from the members, and then we will proceed. So I'm going to get Senator Eaton, Senator Hall, and Senator Scalzi.
Madam Chair, I'd like to propose that we move the bill without recommendation to the tax committee.
Okay. We can.
To transportation.
Okay. So that it might have to go to transportation and then to taxes because it's the order.
But whatever the chair prefers.
Okay, so we will consult with staff. Senator Hall, Senator Scalzi, and then Senator Pappas.
I'd like to move with Senator Pappas the A2 amendment.
Okay. So we have an amendment to the bill that this is the complexity of this bill. That's an amendment that really relates to taxes, but we can put it in here because the committee has the bill in front of us right now.
Madam Chair?
It's a complicated, but definitely we can do
I'm moving the A2 amendment.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Senator Carlson, we have a proposal to move the A2 amendment. So a member has brought an amendment before us.
I already have an amendment on the floor, Madam Chair.
No, we don't.
Or a motion on it.
Thank you. So, but Senator Hall brought this motion before. Now we were entertaining some input from the committee.
Madam Chair, you did indicate that there were going to be amendments.
Yes.
And so I think it's just customary that before we move a bill, we see if there are any amendments.
Yeah.
I don't know that the chair is obligated to take a motion to send a bill out. I think it is a debatable motion still.
Madam Chair, I withdraw my motion.
Thank you. Senator Eaton.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to speak to the amendment.
Senator Pappas.
Pappas Hall amendment. I think that the case was made by Mr. Roberts and others, and I think Ms. McDonough as well, about the Constitution. And so I support this amendment, which would really make it more consistent with the Constitution. I'm not convinced I'm going to vote for the whole bill because I think the problem is that we have this before us because we haven't passed a comprehensive transportation bill, which would be a better approach than this kind of a piecemeal approach. But at least we should make sure that the proposal before us is constitutional.
Okay. Senator Hall and Senator Scott.
Thank you. I would just like to say I agree with Senator Pappas. The Constitution lays out the exemptions, and let me just say this otherwise would be taxing public burial grounds, public schoolhouses, public hospitals, academies, colleges, universities, all seminaries of learning, churches, church property, houses of worship, institution of purely public charity, public property. That's what's proposed in it. So this amendment, if you haven't been able to read it real quick, is basically saying that you cannot tax those things that are exempt from taxation under the Constitution, Article 10, Section 1.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator. Senator Scalzi, on the amendment. We're
yes,
talking about the amendment.
I would
right
be, thank you, Madam Chair. I would be very much opposed to this amendment simply because this amendment takes out the reason that we would need to have a street maintenance utility district. And I just have to remind the rest of the senators here that this is sort of a user fee for all the people that use our utilities. We've heard from 100 cities here in this on this document that are in favor of this document for many of the reasons that this amendment would take away. There are 107 charter cities in Minnesota. And if they choose to impose a utility fee on their people by inserting it in their charter, they can already do that. They already have that ability. And so, for instance, the city of St. Paul, on which we're sitting, has a great deal of difficulty with so many state properties in the city. So there's many utility fees that they charge that we are paying here, because they have this huge burden of so much tax-exempt property. They simply can't balance their budget with that. So we're paying, and I'm sure the senator from St. Paul would be able to expound on this. There's many utility fees that we're already paying here, and I'm assuming they're a charter city, so they're able to do that. So we're paying like a snow plowing fee and a tree trimming fee and all sorts of fees that they have to impose on their taxpayers if they didn't have this utility capability. So it's been a huge benefit for the city of St. Paul because of the fact that there's so much tax-exempt property in it. I think that if we were to do this, we would be saying to these 100 cities that are in favor of this bill that you can't do this, but the 107 charter cities have the ability to do this if they put it within their charter, as St. Paul already has done. So it's a user fee. And let me tell you, from coming from state government, where I spent most of my time, a lot more time than I have here, you try to do a mill and an overlay, which is what most cities do when their streets are getting in bad shape. You can't afford to do the assessment. You don't want to tax your people. So you do a mill and an overlay. If you try to do that with special assessments, you would lose in court because you can't prove the benefit to the property because they had a road already. So now you've milled it and overlaid it, and it's going to last another 20, 30 years. How are you going to pay for that? You can't do an assessment project because you can't prove that that property now has benefited because they had a street before. So it's not like you're redoing a street and digging it up and redoing sewer and water lines. You can assess that because you can prove a direct benefit in court. And this all comes down to getting out of court for cities. And that's why the cities are so concerned about having this ability. And I just think that this amendment would take away that ability for the cities to run their city in a decent fashion. We don't want to all become pothole cities here. But if we take this away, then the users that use the streets would not be paying, and we would have to then increase property taxes on the property owners, which is really unfair if the users aren't paying for that ability to use that.
So, members, clearly this is an issue that, brings transportation taxes. I would like to briefly hear from you, Senator, because I'm very tempted to table this and just so that you we can talk about sending it to taxes. And because the issue of jurisdiction, which is the issue that I want to talk about in this committee, is getting lost because it's attached to the real issue that is proposed in this bill. So the complexity of dealing with the tax provision really is engulfing the conversation on the jurisdiction that will be responsible for doing that. And I don't want to dwell on the whole tax provision because that's just not my jurisdiction. So I would like to hear you briefly tell us what is your position on this amendment, and I am going to move with the decision. Please, Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, I am not particularly opposed to this amendment, but I would like to ask counsel a question as to whether this amendment, because we have charter cities that already have these fees in place, and does this amendment upend what they have already done? Will it reverse what is done for instance, in St. Paul?
Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Carlson. I think the only answer I'm prepared to offer is maybe. I apologize for not having a better answer. It's possible that that imposed this by a city charter that has something similar, calling it a municipal street improvement fee, may be affected by this. It's possible that their charter may have it set up in a different manner, so this may not apply to that. So I don't have a good answer for you.
Thank you. So, Senator,
that was my concern, Madam Chair, was because my city also uses this procedure, and I worry that this amendment will disallow what they've been doing for 20 years.
So, Senator, I think what I'm going to do is that I am going to table this, and we're not going to take action in this committee, and we are going to ask you to, I think, Madam President, since you're here, my desire would be that the discussion that was brought before this particular committee be available, and that we are going to reflect in the minutes that the core provision that is attached to this bill is related to transportation and taxes, and therefore
we submit the bill to those in that order to transportation and then to taxes.
Madam Chair,
that's the motion that I would like to present. And let me go around Senator Peterson, Senator Thompson, and Senator Hall.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just wanted to get clarification. However, this committee does have jurisdiction over this bill and granting this local authority. So you can refer the bill to another committee, but ultimately this bill needs to pass out of this committee.
It needs to come here.
And so that's your intention.
Correct, Senator.
What's going to happen.
Correct, Senator.
Okay.
So the only reason I do, so there is an issue of initiating the conversation there or initiating the conversation on the core issue, and it was referred to the committee to do the other way around. I disagree with that process, and I believe that the core issue needs to be addressed first, and then the municipalities will be granted that. So it's interesting. The way I see it is the decision on taxing is made. We agree as a Senate that this is made, and then we grant it to the municipality. So it's the other way around, not we grant to the municipalities a decision that we don't – it's a very complex decision for which we don't have information. So I'm going to try to move it the other way around.
To that point, though, Senator Madam Peterson. Chair, I would draw a distinction between the decision to grant taxing authority – and taxes in general, and rates and things of that nature. That those are actually two different decisions. And so just, you know, so we're clear that that decision to give taxing authority is within the purview of this committee, and it's coming back and has to pass here.
It will come back here.
So long, I'm fine with that.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Peterson.
Thompson.
I just said Senator Peterson and Senator Thompson.
No next. Problem, Madam Chair. Thank you. I'd like to ask Council, I think it's a little unusual to put it in layman's terms, just kind of punt on a bill. This is the Committee of Original Jurisdiction. We have the authority to vote or not vote on this. And as the Committee of Original Jurisdiction, we can deal with any topic. I can't articulate any more clearly than Senator Peterson just did that whether or not a unit of government gets taxing authority is solidly within the purview of this committee. I don't know why we wouldn't vote on the bill. And can we just punt? Can we just say, well, never mind, we're going to send it on and we're not going to take action on it? That's odd.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
We can, the issue is, I think that Senator Eaton is proposing is that we refer without a recommendation. And Senator Thompson, the reason is that the core issue on taxing is so attached to kind of who exercises their authority, but at the end is the authority itself. It's not who exercised the authority. So that's why the complexity on these two things kind of really going together. Who does it, but what is that thing that they do? And so that's the complexity on that issue, Senator Thompson, and then Senator.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. But if we're going to refer it without recommendation, that would normally imply it is not going to come back here. And I agree with Senator Peterson that this is clearly a bill that belongs in this committee, and that the granting of authority to a local government to tax is so. Are we sending it on without recommendation and we're done? Or if we're going to vote, what's going to change between now and after it's gone through the Tax Committee and the Transportation Committee?
Thank you, Senator. And I have also been reminded by the staff that we had your amendment before
motion.
Us. And we had a motion that we had to vote on. And we haven't done that. And we are moving into a recommendation for the bill. So I'm going to ask that we stay on the motion.
That's Senator. Thank Senator you, Madam Eaton. Chair. Because that's my point is that I don't know how I would vote on the motion until I know how it affects my municipalities in my district.
Yeah.
Because this language may interfere with what they're doing because they are charter cities, and I'm fine with what they're doing, but I also agree that, you know, we don't want to step on nonprofits.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to answer until I get a tax specialist or expert to tell me that information.
Yes, Senator Pepper.
Madam Chair, I guess this was news to me, and I don't know if my city is also bucking the Constitution in doing this. So I feel like I need more information. Maybe the best thing would be, because I agree that it should stay in this committee and not be bounced around, maybe we should just lay it over. And I'm not going to make that motion unless we have a consensus on it. Madam Chair, I'm suggesting that maybe we should have a discussion of laying it over. It's not discussable, but maybe we should have a discussion before we make the motion to lay it over so we can get some answers to some of these questions.
Madam Chair.
Okay, so apparently the motion to lay it on the table is a higher motion, and we can act and need to act on that.
I didn't make that motion.
So we made that.
I move that the bill be laid on the table, and I ask for a roll call.
That takes care of that.
Yep.
Not discussable.
That's correct. That takes care of that. I'm sorry about this, but this is a very recent, Senator Carlson. We wanted to hear this bill. it's a very interesting concept, and we definitely need to do that. So,
Torres Ray?
Yes.
Eaton?
Yes.
Hall?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
Yes.
Hayden? Housley?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Peterson?
Yes.
Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Wicklund?
Yes.
Thank you, Senator.
Kind of saving him.
Too late for the party, brother.
Hayden just walked in if he wants to vote.
Senator Hayden, would you like to record your vote?
Aye.
You want to be with me, don't you?
You'd be with me, too.
I want Newman back.
So with 10 yeses and 3 noes, the motion is adopted. Members, thank you. This was a wonderful discussion, and we will continue this discussion in the future. And for now, our committee is adjourned.